From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I am from North Beach.
I'm from Pacific Heights.
I live at 24th and Valencia.
I live in the Outer Sunset by the beach.
I listen to KALW from the Panhandle for the last 12 years.
Coming up, the story of how one of San Francisco's most famous theater companies broke the law.
Ladies and gentlemen, Il Truppo di Mimo di San Francisco present for your appreciation this afternoon an arrest. And the cops came and arrested me.
The 50th anniversary of the San Francisco Mime Troupe's controversial act. Then we'll go behind the scenes with some of America's best South Asian comedians.
When immigrants talk about immigrant comedy situations, it does sound more funny because it's more true.
And we'll find out the answer to this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
Quick, quick, a little faster. Quick, quick, slow, slow. Quick, quick, move.
We're setting the stage today on Cross Currents. To some ears, a radio report on a mime troupe might sound like a contradiction in terms, but the San Francisco Mime Troupe has a history of being one of the city's most vocal social critics. Tomorrow marks the 50th anniversary of the day they almost fell silent. KALW's Lizak Shalit has the story.
Il Truppo di Mimo di San Francisco presents for your appreciation. Il Truppo di Mimo, 2 o'clock, in the car, free show. How are you there?
This clip from the documentary, Have You Heard of the San Francisco Mime Troupe?, takes us back to the summer of 1965.
This is the San Francisco Mime Troupe giving a free performance in one of San Francisco's public parks. The Mime Troupe conceives of itself as a radical alternative to commercial theater. Most of the people who see the Mime Troupe perform are ardent supporters, but some are shocked and offended by its irreverence. Its most prominent critic has been the San Francisco Park and Recreation Commission, which has tried unsuccessfully to bar the Mime Troupe from the city's parks.
But the Mime On August 7th, the mood in Lafayette Park was explosive. 2 days earlier, the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Commission had declared the Mime Troupe's latest show to be, quote, obscene, indecent, and offensive.
We knew that the Rec and Park was going to censor us, essentially. But we got a permit for 15, 20 performances.
That's R.J. Davis, founder of the Mime Troupe.
After the fourth performance, they said, we don't like the play. We think it's not appropriate for the parks. And we don't like the content of it because it's anti-Semitic and it's anti-Catholic and it's anti-anti-anti. We knew we were going to get arrested if we did this show again. And so we went to the park that day, August 7th, and it wasn't clear what they were going to arrest us for.
About 1,000 people were there, and not just playgoers, also park commissioners, lawyers, media, and the police.
And we're all discussing, what is it you're going to arrest me for? I said, are you going to arrest us for putting up the platform? They said, yes. I said, well, we don't want to be arrested for that. This is like false arresting.
For Davis and the troupe's fans, the issue was not permission to perform in the park. It was censorship. Tensions were mounting. Then, in a brilliant stroke of improv, just as the show was about to begin, Davis donned a mask, grabbed a mic, and announced,
Ladies and gentlemen, Il Truppo di Mimo di San Francisco present for your appreciation this afternoon an arrest. And the cops came and arrested me.
As if on cue, Davis flung himself into the arms of the policeman who had stepped forward to arrest him. As the crowd roared, Davis was escorted away, booked for performing without a permit, and released on bail 2 hours later. The incident became a rallying cry during the free speech battles of the 60s. Benefit concerts to raise money for the troupe's legal fees made Haight-Ashbury history, with bands like the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane. Today, parks all around San Francisco and the Bay Area host the Mime Troupe.
Berkeley, how you doing today? Oh, there we go, there we go. All right, we've still got a few minutes before the show starts, so you've got a chance to text your friends, tell them they want to be here.
Today's show is Freedom Land. Despite the slapstick, it's a play that digs deeply into racial profiling and policing. It isn't tongue-in-cheek.
I would say our audience is mainly made up of people who have questions about the way things are going right now.
That's playwright Michael Gene Sullivan, who also stars in the show.
This particular show, Freedom Land, is definitely bringing in people that may not have seen a mime troupe show in some time or ever, because this is their issue. And they may not think of themselves as particularly political, left, right, or center. They just know that this issue is outraging them.
Sullivan is talking about people like Rick Fuji, who's attending his first mime troupe show.
From what I saw from the trailers, I think I will come away knowing that other people know what I know, and hopefully know more.
Entertainment is only part of what the troupe does. Again, here's playwright Sullivan.
We also want them to feel like something must be done. And that's one of the real tricks with trying to do political theater, is to not have the revolution finish on stage. You want to leave something for the audience to do.
Take me to church, I'll worship like a dog at the shrine of your lies. I'll tell you my sins, you can drive me.
Freeze! Frozen? Where is it? Where's what? It? What? It? What? The weed! The weed!
Ain't no weed here!
The database says there is.
You got the wrong address!
We've heard that before!
People still gather to see the troupe, and the themes continue to impress audiences.
We've been thinking a lot about how to talk to our daughter about, you know, being multiracial and how to engage with it. And so we thought this would give us some, you know, more fuel to think about it in a different light.
I believe that I'm here for fun. I believe I'm here to learn something, because that's what the mime troupe does, is it educates people while it has its plays.
There's a little bit of anxiety around the encroachment on freedoms of speech.
To use it as a jumping off point, you know, with our friends when we go talk to them later at a barbecue about like what we saw and kind of how it plays into things that we're experiencing right now in our community.
It's really great to come out, for so many reasons. I mean, using our parks, public spaces, getting community together to celebrate the arts.
It's a San Francisco summer tradition with a tribe of followers, like Arnie Passman, now in his 80s. He was at Lafayette Park 50 years ago defending free speech.
And I remember somebody throwing a rock into the performance and trying to chase the guy down. It's just been a love affair ever since.
And so, the mime troupe that refused to be silent celebrates another outspoken season in the parks. For Cross Currents, I'm Lizak Shalit.
Thank you! We are the San Francisco Mime Troupe!
This piece was produced with the help of Catherine Girardeau. Some of the voices you heard in the story were Sonia Miles, Hilary Sardinius, Jamie Tibbetts, and Brandy Wilkins-Catanese. The San Francisco Mime Troupe performs throughout the summer, with final performances in San Francisco on Labor Day weekend. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. Act 2. We're shifting the spotlight from mime troupes to stand-up comedians. The DC Comedy Festival is the only South Asian comedy festival in America. It's based in the Bay Area and features shows in San Francisco, Sacramento, Oakland, Pleasanton, and Sunnyvale. Co-creators and comedians Samson Koletkar and Abhay Nadkarni joined KALW's Hanna Baba in studio to talk about South Asian comedy.
What does Desi mean?
For me, Desi is a broader term. It means anyone that's South Asian. You know, Pardesi is a Hindi word that means someone living outside of your country. You know, so Pardesi is
alien.
An alien.
An immigrant.
An immigrant, yeah.
So we should call it Pardesi comedy.
I'm sure someone will come up with that and call it the
So Pakistani,
comedy.
Bangladesh,
exactly.
All
Nepal,
of those are Desi.
Sri Lanka, everybody in the South Asian
Bhutan,
continent, everybody in.
Tibet.
Yeah, we'll take all of them.
Excellent.
So this year we are doing shows in Sacramento, San Francisco, Oakland, Sunnyvale, and Pleasanton. And you also got to realize Indians don't like to travel too much, right? That's why we never invaded any other country. We're like, no, I think we're fine where we are. Going somewhere and invading is too far, too much work.
And we're lazy.
And lazy. So nobody from Sunnyvale is coming up to San Francisco. They're like, that's too far. My kids, who's going to watch them?
Yeah.
They don't believe in babysitters. They'll believe in 3 million guards. So it's a weird community that we belong to.
So you're taking it to them.
We're like, all right, if you don't come to us, we'll come to you.
To you. Yeah.
Wow.
We're serving them comedy.
you know your audience very well.
Yeah. We grew up amongst them. We are one of them. We are our own audience in some way. Like, I love watching all these folks who are on the show, because last year we had about 11 comics. This year we've expanded to 19 that we're showcasing. And most of us are based out of the Bay Area and Sacramento. We got one comic coming in from India and one from Seattle.
One from Seattle.
Yeah. So it's growing. And we've already seen a lot of interest, because we're getting inquiries from comics in Chicago, London, more comics from India. So everybody wants to be a part of this now. Yeah. It's kind of like catching up.
Is there a big comedy scene in India?
Yeah, it's massive. Big. Very big. It's growing, and there's a huge, huge interest in comedy because...
Huge demand.
I think there's a cultural zeitgeist happening in India right now where people are just listening to all kinds of media. The internet has changed things a lot. They see a lot of comedy on YouTube, clips from the Laugh Factory, Comedy Central specials. So the ease of access to comedy is really... grown a lot, and people want to see content. They consume content so quickly that they're always hungry for more. Hmm. There's a huge scene in India right now.
I love being Indian. My favorite part about being Indian is we get the best advice from our parents. It's like, it's Indian values, but it's said with American sayings, so it comes out all f***ed up. Don't worry, sometimes things like this are a blessing and a ski mask. It is better to have one bird in the hand instead of two hands in your bush.
That is Priya Prasad, and she's going to be performing as part of the Desi Comedy Fest. With me here in studio are the founders, co-creators of it, Samson Koletkar and Abhay Nadkarni. What is it about immigrant jokes that make them so funny? We just heard Priya imitating her father, and the audience is going wild. Russell Peters and Angela Johnson have made careers out of imitating immigrants. What is that? What do you think that is, Samson?
I would look at it as two things, right? One is it's the truth and relatable, coming especially from an immigrant. There's always this thing about, if I am brown and I make fun of somebody that's not brown, then people get a little stiff about it. It's like, whoa, hold on, right? As an example, one of the things I talk about, I'm not doing the whole bit, but I talk about how I can tell you a statement and you can tell me whether it's a stereotype or if it's racist.
Mm-hmm.
And the statement is, black people, and now you're already thinking that's racist. Right? Because I'm not black. You know what I mean? Like, I just pause there even before I've completed the statement. I'm not even finishing the statement, and people have, something racist is coming out of his mouth.
Something's coming.
You know what I mean? Pavlovian thing.
Exactly, right? So that, I think, plays a big role into this. When immigrants talk about immigrant comedy situations, it does sound more funny because it's more true.
And so you can laugh
relatable.
About your people, but
more
not
easily.
About other people.
And I think that's the challenge is, for me, after that pause, I still do have a joke that I do make about black people, and I still want people to laugh about it, right? The key is, I think, as the saying goes, you got to take yourselves down first before you take others down with you. And so if I can make joke of myself, and I can joke about Indians, I can joke about Jews, I can joke about husbands, I can joke about fathers, because all of that is me. And once I'm able to laugh at myself, people relax a little more. And they're like, okay, if he can... He's taking a shot at himself and his own communities. All the boxes that we have squeezed him into, he's making fun of those boxes. Now we can let him get into the other boxes a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's always the challenge for me is, like Abhay said earlier, everything's fair game. There's no topic off limits. There's nothing off the table. Everything is okay for comedy. It always makes a difference about how you go about doing it. Are you putting somebody down? Are you making a point about... or trying to raise someone up.
You mentioned you are Indian and you are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear a clip that, a hilarious clip really, about that.
Now, I am happy right now because my wife and I are having our first baby. Yay. Thank you. But Let me clarify one thing first, because the minute I say my wife and I, some people go, dude, where's your ring? Now, I had a ring, and unfortunately, I lost it. Better the ring than the wife, you know. But then I bought another ring, and unfortunately, I lost that too. And look, people, I am Indian and Jewish. There's no way I'm buying a third ring.
So that is Samson Kolhatkar, a.k.a.
Mahatma Moses.
Mahatma Moses. So then that's an example of you kind of just taking a stab at yourself and Jewish people, but you're Jewish, so it's okay.
Yeah, and that's actually the lightest of jokes that you picked, which I'm glad you did, because I go after Jews quite so hard, right? And I do the same with Indians too. Like wherever we see inconsistency, we will point it out. And stupidity comes in all shapes, colors, sizes, genders, religions. And that's what we like to highlight. So that's the part of fun of doing this for me.
But then it feels like, Abhay, that it's this line that you guys are walking, and you might fall this way and things might be offensive and not funny.
Well, that's the risk you take, you know. You won't know unless you try. Mm. Like, I did this joke about tanning salons being a really good form of white privilege. And it works in some crowds. It doesn't work in other crowds, you know. Like, because you get the benefits as a white person of getting a tan, but not having the liabilities of being brown, you know. Mm-hmm.
So do you get out and look at your audience and then determine what your jokes are
So I tried that joke in San Francisco. It works here. It doesn't work in, say, San Diego as much, you know, because people get more tans there and they're a little more right-wing in that part of town. So I'll try and see if that joke works. You know, I'll do the joke anyway, because I think there's some funny aspects to it, you know. But, you know, the more I do stand up, the more I feel like I need to address some things, you know, in a very... interesting manner. Like, I saw these two women coming out of a tanning salon. They were having an argument on who had the better shade of brown. I was standing behind them saying, hey, ladies, what do you mean by the perfect shade of brown? And that was my pickup line. Like, that's essentially how that worked. And then they just looked at me, got scared, and ran away. Like, that's what happened. Because I feel like in their mind, they were thinking, okay, there's a perfect shade of brown with this tan thing. So she just must have gone in there saying, hey, I want to look like Shakira, but I don't want to get deported. Like, that's a perfect shade of brown for her, you know? Because that's the thing, right? I mean, as a white person, you could still get tanned and you could still hate Mexicans. Like, that's the thing. That's the hypocrisy that I don't like. Like, if you want to be brown, go all the way, you know?
Be Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, be a Rachel Dolezal. Exactly. Exactly. Embrace it.
I mean, and then... I'm sorry.
The DC Comedy Fest is August 12th through 19th in cities around the Bay Area. KALW is actually a partner. Details are at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
My husband and I, we live in Lake County, which is over 100 miles away. And people say that, you come this far to dance? I say, well, there's nowhere to dance for us in Lake County. And there's not likely to be soon. So... of course.
That voice belongs to Chris Baines. He's a regular at the Sundance Saloon, an LGBT Western dance club here in San Francisco. KALW's Hannah Kingsley Ma spent a Sunday at the saloon to find out more.
I'm standing outside the Sundance Saloon in San Francisco's Bayview District, talking to a tall man in a cowboy hat.
My name is Chris Baines, and I have been coming to Sundance since I met my husband 10 years ago.
Outside, it's a nondescript building on a sleepy street. But inside, there's a neon-lit bar a big open dance floor with a disco ball, and country western music reigned supreme. Baines and his husband Skip Davis live in Lake County. They make the 100-mile trip to the Sundance Saloon every week.
And people say that, wow, you come this far to dance? I said, well, there's nowhere to dance for us in Lake County, and there's not likely to be soon.
The Sundance Association for Country Western Dancing is one of the only LGBT Western dance clubs in the Bay Area. It started in 1999, and now it's a nonprofit organization that puts on the saloon every Thursday and Sunday evening. On those nights, volunteer instructors teach beginners the basics, like how to two-step and line dance. I wander into the two-step class. There's couples of all ages, some same-sex, some not. They're guiding each other around the dance floor. A handful concentrate hard on their feet, sliding across the room to lyrics like these. The next room over, a group of dancers are learning a complicated line dance. Everyone is standing in rows, kicking out their heels in synchronized fluid motions.
And a one, two, three, four, and a five, a six. Don't feel discouraged if you don't master it tonight.
After an hour, the dance floor opens up, an opportunity for people to hone their waltz, their West Coast swing, and everything in between. It's a tight-knit collective on a mostly first-name basis. I ask who would be a good unofficial spokesperson for the saloon, and a dancer points me in the direction of a smiling man in a long white tunic.
My full name is Neeraj Sharma, and I started coming here around 2004. I was still in the coming out process, and I was an immigrant. I talked to somebody online, and I asked them, I want to go to a place where it's not a bar, because I don't drink, and just where gay people hang out.
Now, a country western dance might not seem like the ideal place to meet other gay people. The music isn't exactly known for its inclusivity. Most of the love songs are strictly about heterosexual love. Few of the singers are openly out, and the music is championed in some of the most conservative states in the country. But Sherman tells me it doesn't bother him.
To me, it does not matter whether the song is ultra-religious, whether it is, put a ring on me and then take me to the Jesus or whatever they say and, you know, take me down to the church or... So I just treat it as a song. There are no quote-unquote set boundaries and rules. You can wear a dress and you can dance. And the main thing I like is it has given me my best friends.
A few people are dressed up in starched shirts and cowboy boots. One of the dancers, Joyce Ganoon, explains to me the choice behind her footwear.
The smoothest way to dance it is to actually slide your feet. So leather soles is pretty key.
She shuffles her feet on the pavement to illustrate her point. Later in the evening, she asks me to dance.
When you see new people, like, you always go up to them and you ask them to dance. We have a stranger, dance with a stranger, like every night.
I'm wearing thick rubber-soled clogs, roughly resembling two misshapen bricks, and I step on Ganoon's toes more than once as we make our way around the dance floor. But thankfully, Ganoon's a gracious teacher, leading me with confidence. All right. For some, the Sundance Saloon isn't just a place to practice the two-step. It's the staging ground for some major life moments. Take Chris Baines and Skip Davis, the couple from Lake County.
He took me out on the dance floor, and I was totally clueless. And he proposed to me, and we got married on the dance floor as well.
What was your first dance?
Can I Have This Dance for the Rest of My Life? That was the song he chose.
At the Sundance Saloon, I'm Hannah Kingsley Ma for Cross Currents.
I'll always remember the song the first time we danced, and I knew.
Our winner this week was Robert Weiner. Congratulations! We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt.
And held other, I fell in love with you. Could I have this dance for the rest of my life? Would you be my partner?
Are there any upcoming performances that you're excited about? Tell us what it is and why. Email us at news@kalw.org and we will check it out. Because of you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Allison Lee, Timothy Lou Lee, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Raja Shah, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chian. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.